So I think one of the most important things in considering guardianship, whether one is the applicant, the court investigator, the court, the judge, him or herself, is to understand what's the purpose. And so here in the code, it explains at 1101.001A, a court may appoint a guardian with either full or limited authority over an incapacitated person as indicated by the incapacitated person's actual, and emphasis added, mental or physical limitations, and only if necessary to promote and protect the well-being of the incapacitated person. I think that this is certainly a foundational inquiry that any practitioner approaching from any angle should grapple with. It's not at all uncommon for us to have parents of aging out children who are, you know, not wrongfully, certainly, concerned about their child. But in some of that exploration is potential harm. And so I think when we look back to this statutory authority here, the code would seem to indicate that there's something actual, something real, and not proposed or theoretical, which may be at odds with what may be likely. In the next section at 1101.001B, the code goes on to say that in creating a guardianship that gives guardian limited authority over an incapacitated person, the court shall design the guardianship to encourage the development or maintenance of maximum self-reliance and independence in the incapacitated person, including by presuming that the incapacitated person retains capacity to make personal decisions regarding the person's residence. So I think, again, there's mandatory language, so we're all compelled to deal with it. Although it seems unwieldy, I think as I've spoken with practitioners across the state, many, many trial courts, whether in contested or uncontested proceedings and guardianship, are having certainly time dedicated on their docket to exploring these issues, which I think are necessary, not just from a legislative standpoint, but also when you look to the subject of the guardianship, a person who may or may not be in need and has their own individual life. And so I think that the statutory language is so important and impressive, and it's something that, again, when we're going through and making these decisions about supports and services, when we're thinking about capacity, I think we also must go back to these themes of self-reliance and independence, which are so important. So let's turn to the legislative history, which is quite interesting. So the legislature has tasked lawyers, judges, and courts generally to exercise best efforts to take reasonable measures to promote the independence of an individual who may need assistance with various tasks in life. Recommendations to change how guardianships are established and continued were meant to address expected growth in the number of disabled individuals, potential guardianships, and the intended demand on the judicial system. What's interesting in Harris County in particular, one probate court in and of itself will have over 1,000 guardianships at any one given time in various stages of administration, sometimes going well over 2,000. And often we're talking about only one guardianship auditor or coordinator, and maybe an assistant coordinator at some of our statutory probate courts. So the existing numbers certainly would indicate that the administration of guardianship in general is something worth considering from a volume perspective. But I think as we saw with the investigation numbers and the operation and review of guardianships, the actual reality of the oversight of guardianships warranted this review as well. The proponents of these legislative changes maintain support for the legislative changes because they were meant to ensure that guardianships were used as a last resort. In fact, guardianship courts or the probate court were often referred to as the court of last resort, a court of equity. And in some jurisdictions, they are still referred to as that. And so when we think about those concepts and the origins of our probate or court of last remedies, Certainly, guardianship as a measure of relief within them should be considered. The next step or the next issue for proponents of the legislation was to educate lawyers and the court handling guardianship matters. Definitely as a practitioner who's done guardianship, as Renee kindly pointed out, I've done it for some time. And you definitely in the guardianship side of the probate court would see lawyers who were not, did not have an adequate baseline to address some of the issues to address a guardianship, to understand conceptually what the guardianship was, what are these principles of supports and services and alternatives. And when we think back to the Christie May stories and the Harold stories and families just immediately running to a guardianship as a solution, then we often were missing that level of analysis which said, okay, we understand that this concern, whether potential or actual, is there. But is there any other measure we can use short of a guardianship? And so I think that the legislative change to require all counsel is to give us, at least in the bar, a baseline to understand what a guardianship is. And often to reduce the amount of contests where contests hopefully are not necessary. And then the final goal of the proponents was to create a balance in guardianships, which can be useful tools that can nonetheless be costly and excessive restrictions.